Welcome back, folks, to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. On today's show, we have Alex Baker from the IES. Well, we got DLC when we talked to him, and we had a whole bunch of different stuff to say. It was a good conversation. It's always good to talk about the IES, what they're up to, what their plans are for the future. They are the lighting authority. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Keystone Technologies. Go to KEYSTONETECH.com, baby. Light made easy, the retrofit kings. Liking that 9-watt bypass there, Greg.
Yeah, well, they brought out a new LED tube that they're going to have available in July coming up. That's going to be 9 watts and a 4-foot bypass tube. Flicker free, which you like, Mike. It's got that. And 180 lumens per watt, 183. Holy That's crazy. That's so you're talking actually. The original tubes were 100, 120. Now they're up to 180. He's still knocking it out again with that product. I think that'll be a great seller for him. So check it out when it's ready.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's crazy. How much further can we go, man?
I thought we were close to the max, but that's a good 20 lumen per watt jump from the previous generation. So keep it going. Let's go. Sell more.
Go to KeystoneTech.com. It's almost time you could take out the 16 and 18 waters from the old and pop in a Keystone 9 water.
I know. It's starting to be that way. Let's go from the 32-watt T8 to the 25-watt T8 or the 28-watt or whatever we want it to be.
Do it, son.
Time to upgrade.
Go to KeystoneTech.com. And you got that flicker argument, too. Go to KEYSTONETECH.com. Light made easy, the retrofit kings. But for right now, we're going to throw Alex Baker from IES at you, recorded at the DLC Annual Stakeholders Meeting.
Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Alex Baker.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, say hi to Greg Garrick.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for coming on. Good to have you at the DLC convention in person.
Yeah.
That's always good.
So tell us, why is the IES here and what is its relationship to the DLC?
Sure. So the IES is a standards development organization that's accredited by the American National Standards Institute, or ANSI. And we develop the ANSI standards for lighting. Lighting products, so for measuring, especially for measuring lighting products. And so the Design Lights Consortium uses our standards as part of the process for evaluating luminaires for qualification. And so they have an interest in the development and revision and maintenance of our standards, and we have an interest in helping anyone who wants to use our standards to make good use of them.
And what do you do at the DLC? Maybe your job title. What's your job there?
So at the IES. At the IES, my job is Manager of Government Affairs and Public Policy. So I manage federal and state agency relationships and also work on a number of policy matters related to lighting practice. Mm-hmm. So NEMA is sort of the lighting industry side. When you get into products and things like that, IES is representing lighting practitioners, so lighting designers, engineers, optical designers, lab technicians, architects.
How important is the relationship or is the presence of IES at DLC now?
I'd say it's important. Yeah. I mean, I think most manufacturers at this point, I think, are pretty familiar with the standards that have been developed at IES for evaluating LED products, namely IES LM79, LM80, TM21, TM30 is also in that specification. So it's important to be part of the conversation. Talk to people who use our standards to evaluate their products, and talk to the laboratories who use the same standards, and just work together to try to improve our products, improve the standards over time. And that comes really by way of understanding how people are using the standards and what their experience is using them.
The IES, the DLC is really an accreditation agency, right? They accredit products and offer their branding and that to be used in various utility rebate programs. How does the IES relate to an accreditation agency? Does it relate to all of them the same? Because NEMA would be another accreditation agency. UL would be an accreditation agency.
So I've spent way too much time thinking about terminology over the years. So I'll break it down a little bit for you. So NEMA is a standards development organization, and IES is a standards development organization. We are accredited by the American National Standards Institute, so that's the accreditation part. Laboratories that use our standards, they are accredited by an accreditation body to the standards that they use. So they can be, a laboratory can be accredited for LM79, for instance. Products are certified, and so through a program like Energy Star, for instance, where a third-party laboratory tests the product, and that's on the other side of a firewall, often within that same company, the certification body side of that shop certifies the product to say, well, the test report looks like this, specification from Energy Star looks like this, we certify that it meets this specification. DLC, they call themselves qualification for a reason, because the products aren't sent through a third-party certification body. It's done by DNR International, which is just one company that does that work. So all these words are kind of finely tuned to be specific to what they do.
Hmm. So who would be a competitor to the DLC?
Hmm. I don't know.
Do they need a competitor?
Hmm. I don't know.
Is it something that the IES ever could have done or been done something like what DLC is doing in terms of certifying products, or is it something that they would always prefer to stay out of?
It's not really the type of work that our society does. Mm-hmm. The Illuminating Engineering Society is a technical society. It's an engineering society, obviously. And it's really focused on standards development, education, networking among lighting practitioners. This isn't the type of work that we would do. We really sort of stick to what we know. We develop the methods of measurement, standards, technical memoranda and such that are used by organizations like DLC, Energy Star, various others.
Is the DLC too powerful?
Gosh, I don't know.
I think that, you know, just in listening to what people in the industry say in back rooms when they're not being recorded on the Get a Grip Online podcast, I think a lot of people think the DLC is too powerful. Mm. I think they, and I don't think it's, I think that they were sucked into a vacuum by the lack of the utilities needed somebody to tell them what to do. I think Jim Benya told us last night that none of the utilities have lighting experts on their staff anymore.
There are very few.
Less
than they used to.
Yeah, they used to have, like, the lighting expertise used to be in the utilities.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's gone.
Yeah, I've seen the same thing. As for whether it's too powerful or not, I don't know. I worked at Energy Star for 5 years, and I saw the value in what that program does for helping sort of keep all the junk out of the market and help to promote the good stuff that consumers are likely to latch on to. That was very much a market-based system. You could go to a variety of different certification bodies, a variety of different test labs. It was there's a whole market of those services available to you. I do understand some concerns with the DLC because it's not set up that way. You have to go to one place for you can go to a variety of places for the testing, but the qualification aspect happens at one place, has one price, and so I can understand that some people have that concern.
And their movement into controls and human-centric lighting or healthy lighting or whatever the jargon that's going to emerge that we're going to call that. We had a great talk about that with Jim Benny last night.
Uh-huh.
And we could go down that rabbit hole again of what to call it.
Oh, human-centric lighting. I just can't wait for that term to go away.
Yeah.
Heard that a couple times.
Yeah, well, he was pretty upset about that term.
Really?
Simply because lighting affects all life, not just human life.
That's always been my argument, is if it's lighting, as soon as you put the ing on the end of it, you make it an active verb. I don't know of any other animals, except for maybe some deep sea creatures that produce their own light to see what they're about to eat.
Sure.
I don't know anybody else who's lighting other than humans, right? So yeah. It's kind of human-centric to begin with, I think. But I think where it really comes from is a hesitancy, I might be wrong, a hesitancy by manufacturers to embrace the word health in the same sentence as lighting, because as soon as you do that, you start talking about Food and Drug Administration getting involved and
sure.
all kinds of regulations.
I think they should be involved, actually.
Maybe. It might be time.
You know, it's interesting because we did a podcast. I can't remember. Was it with... Well, we called it First Do No Harm, was the name of the podcast. And it was about, you know, healthy lighting, human-centric lighting, and people are going making claims. And we've had a couple podcasts that we haven't been able to release where people have come on and made claims about, you know, lighting and the health effects of lighting and that. It's been problematic in that people are saying, yes, you can have productivity gains. And all the experts are saying, no, we don't know that actually. So the health effects of lighting thing is an interesting place for the DLC to be trying to, accredit lighting that is healthy. What do you think of that, Greg?
Yeah, well, that's, I think what a lot of what it comes down to is healthy. And then they're also talking about quality of lighting. And, you know, the healthy part is a whole other animal that I don't think you can figure out until they can actually do studies where they can define and measure it. I don't think it's even worth, you know, really spending a lot of time on. But the quality part is, and you mentioned it with Energy Star, is that you know that they buy an Energy Star product that it's quality. Do you feel that that's the case with DLC or about to be the case with DLC, that they're going to actually be able to define quality of lighting?
So one thing that's common between the DLC, Energy Star, and IES is that all the organizations are focused on quality. If you didn't have any sort of quality metrics within the specifications and it was purely a lumens per watt play, we would have intensely bright blobs of light that are just glary everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good that DLC is heading in the direction of adding some quality metrics where they didn't have.
But can we agree on quality metrics?
So far, I haven't heard anybody agree on.
Yeah.
So can we?
It kind of depends on who's in the room.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Dr. Veach was telling us that you have physicists, biologists, anthropologists, and all sorts of different kinds of scientists weighing in on this now. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming a much broader scientific issue than just light bulb geeks.
It's true. Yeah, it's true.
Isn't that an IES spot to be in, though? That's really you guys.
It absolutely is. I mean, it's central to our mission. We exist in large part to help promote quality lighting.
So the lighting, the world follows you guys.
The lighting authority. That's what we need.
But it seems like that it's a hot potato being passed around a little bit right now. Where's the IES stand on all this sort of stuff and metrics? And that, are you guys coming up with new metrics? Have you come up with new metrics?
Well, so we have TM30, which is sort of a replacement for CRI that's intended to be a little bit more representative of all of the colors that we see day to day. The shortcoming of CRI was that it was sort of based on just a few pastel colors, basically, and really not representative of what our experience is. So that's one. There is a method of measurement being developed in the testing procedures committee for temporal lighting artifacts, which is a fancy word for saying flicker.
Yeah, sure.
So a method of measurement or a method of measuring flicker will be certainly valuable to the industry. The society is always working on developing new standards that would help to further the cause of lighting quality.
One of the problems I always found with was the linearness of CRI, the fact that it's a linear scale, you know, 0 to 100.
Yeah.
You know, color has depth to it as well. Like, it's almost a three-dimensional measurement you need. It's like a depth and a richness.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's like different levels to it. You have like, you know, how do you describe the color of red wine?
And it's highly subjective too. I mean, you should have seen my, how old was he? 82-year-old grandfather. He was wearing one of the pictures I have of him is this bright red blazer, you know, just crazy bright. And I think he wore that because from his perspective, it wasn't all that loud. But everybody around him who were, well, with younger eyes, would look at him and say, what are you doing?
Some people have said that about this shirt.
I think it looks very stylish on you.
Thank you. So, you know, Greg, so we're always looking at this thing from a perspective of leadership. And also that it's kind of, I feel like we're fish figuring out that we're in the water in a way. And that's come up a couple of times. It's like light has a new excitement to it that mm-hmm. It seems like we know now that we don't know very much about it in a sense. Mm-hmm. You think that's true as well, that statement?
I think we've just hit the tip of the iceberg when it comes to understanding of light's impact on humans. It's an exciting field because there's new knowledge being generated in this area every day. And so it's one of the reasons I'm happy to be in this industry.
And it's exciting, but it's difficult for us to define. You know, if you're trying to sell the product.
And difficult to sell, I imagine.
Yes. And then you want to know that you're doing something quality. Like Flickr is a key issue that we've talked about a lot.
Yeah.
Is, do you think there'll be a point at some point that every product is going to have a measure that we can all say, okay, now I get it. I know they're going through that, but this one is, I've seen people advertise 90 or less than 1% Flickr. Mm-hmm. But what is their scale based on? And why doesn't everybody do that?
Exactly.
So,
and ultimately you're going to be drawing a line, the threshold that's going to include a percentage of the population, but there's still going to be a percentage of the population for which that threshold is insufficient. They still see Flickr and electric light sources. So where do you draw that line?
That's the problem with lighting. It's all, everybody reacts to it differently. So how can you define it, you know, measure it? I don't know where that's ever going
to
come.
It's hard to draw lines in this space. I'll give you an example. The California Energy Commission a few years ago decided that lamps to be sold in California needed to be either 2,700 Kelvin or 3,000 Kelvin, full stop. Ignoring the fact that there's a huge swath of the population in California.
Hang on. So the state of California, we were talking about California last night too. California's got an attitude problem. All right. They think it's not its own country. Like, why are you making trade barriers between states within a union? I mean, that's crazy. But anyway, it happens in Ontario. It tries to pull the same stunts up in Canada.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's actually more difficult to trade with Quebec from Ontario than it is Czechoslovakia or Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's easier to trade with New York than it is. But anyway, long story short. So I lost my train of thought again.
Greg, you had it going.
Where was I then?
So the California Energy Commission decided only warm white.
Yes.
Incandescent,
yes.
2,700 Kelvin or halogen incandescent-ish looking 3,000 Kelvin. And they decided that because, as I understand it, it was another effort to avoid the mistakes of CFLs. In quotes, I say that. And so they decided those two CCTs only. The problem with that is that it ignores that there's a large population of older folks in California, many of whom prefer the higher CCTs because they say that they can see they're reading better, for instance. Sure. It ignores the fact that there's a huge Asian population in California, and a lot of folks who come from Asia prefer the higher color temperatures. If you can go to Hong Kong, which is a really great mix of, you know, Brits and Asian folks and people from all over the world. And what's really neat is you can go and look at the side of a residential skyscraper, and every window has a different color temperature in it.
Wow.
Because you've got the British expats who have their warm white, and then you've got clearly 6,500 Kelvin, and then there are a few standouts there with really super blue sources.
I got a crazy story for you. Okay, I had an electrician who worked for me, and he was from Pakistan. Okay, and we were doing this is back in the fluorescent days, and we had some extra four lamp T5s from this job we were doing, and he asked me if he could have it. I said, "What do you want it for?" He goes, "I want to put it in my living room." You want to do what?
When I lived in DC, the townhouse that we renovated when we moved in, it had 4 foot T12 fluorescent strips just mounted to the wall. That was the light source. And coincidentally, the family that lived there before was a Pakistani family.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, they like that bright light. I mean, you know, it's funny. I read a study a long time ago when I started in lighting. You know, you start reading different catalogs and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember this one catalog, this one study, this guy was making comparisons from maybe, it was really old, maybe mid-80s. And the point he made in the study was that if every home in the United States was lit up by low-pressure sodium lamps, you could pay for the college education of every of every student in America. And I thought, you know nothing about lighting if you were to put low-pressure sodium lamps in people's houses.
Yeah, right.
That would be crazy.
But there's probably a very small percentage of the population that would be fine with that.
Yeah, maybe.
But how do you draw these lines, you know? It strikes me as... it's frustrating to me that an agency can decide one perspective on things for everyone in such a large population.
doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Who did that in California? What agency came out and said, we're going to only do 2,700?
It was part of the CEC. It was the California Energy Commission's decision.
Yeah, I don't get where they even come out with that. That would make sense.
It's motivated by the thought that everyone loves incandescent.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's true. You've got a lot of people who moved to California from elsewhere who never had incandescent in their homes because they've come from a market where energy is much more expensive than it is.
I mean, that's an extreme amount of hubris to legislate the color temperature of lighting. I mean, that's deeply... that's like a... there's just something about that idea that people want to dictate, like as if the little people out there don't know what they're doing. There's something to that that is highly offensive to me, actually.
I can understand it when we're talking about public spaces. That isn't to say that I think the argument that we shouldn't have cool white streetlights because somebody might park a hot dog stand underneath one and get too much blue light.
Sure.
And then they can't fall asleep later in the evening. I'm not saying that. I do understand placing some limits when you're talking about public spaces. But when you're talking about somebody's home, as long as the product is safe, it seems to me they ought to be able to choose what color they have in their home.
And there's a ton of different reasons that people might want higher Kelvin temperature lights.
Yeah.
But to think that a government... It's an interventionism that I think a lot of people... in the lighting business look at and go, why are you wasting your time on that kind of a law? There's so many better things to spend our time on than legislating the color temperature of people's lights.
So
I think the first do no harm is a good position to start from.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make lights that are safe, that don't hurt people first.
That's going to be interesting to see how this is all defined, because I don't know if it is definable. You know, quality lighting, I just don't know if it is. I think you can get characteristics that you can measure, but that's about it.
I'll take you guys in another direction. So quality lighting to some people is a light source that lasts a really, really long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And I'm sure you guys are familiar with two IES standards, IES LM80 and TM21.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So LM80 was developed by a group of experts back in the mid-2000s and published in 2008. We now have more than 10 years of experience using it. It's now an American national standard, having been revised once. We have TM21, which is also nearly 10 years old, and that's also being revised to become an ANSI standard. There's a rule in there, just to keep it very simple, and I think probably most of your podcast listeners are familiar with this. There's a rule in there that says you can't project longer than 6 times the amount of the duration of LM80 data. So if you test it for 10,000 hours, you should not be making any predictions beyond 60,000 hours. It's the 6x rule, and everybody seems to know it pretty well. Within a TM21 report, however, you can also find the values that are not capped. So you can do the projection, and you might end up with 340,000 hours. But the final step in the process is to cap it with the 6x cap. Those values are called the projected L70 and the calculated L70. The reported L70 is the one that's capped, and that's the one that's correct. The industry is, in my view, run amok with using these uncapped values that have no statistical validity whatsoever. And so we're going out selling our customers on the idea of, well, my fixture you should purchase because it's going to last for 300,000 hours, and that guy is only going to last 250,000 hours, both of which are nonsense. Total nonsense.
How long have you been alive for in hours? Right?
But it's ridiculous.
I've been alive for 380,000 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm 41.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I'm around there too.
You know, 400,000 hours as long as my life.
Yeah.
And I feel like if anybody came to me and said this light's going to last 350,000 hours, I'd say, yeah, I wasn't born yesterday, buddy. Come on, that's ridiculous.
My previous job was working for an LED package manufacturer, and so we had to compete against all the other package manufacturers who were playing this game.
Yeah.
And everybody knew the game, and yet we kept doing it. So I'm on sort of a personal...
Makes you sad a little bit, actually.
It's frustrating, at least.
So I'm on sort of a personal mission to try to raise awareness of this and try to see if I can get the industry to right the ship.
We have a policy on this show, no 10-year warranties. So we're trying to end the 10-year warranty.
Okay.
We want to end it.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Nobody should be offering 10-year warranties. It's not a viable time frame for a warranty. Yeah. You know, unless you're going to back a whole bunch of stuff out of that warranty.
Especially where the price is at.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to charge double the amount, then give them a 10-year. But just don't do that.
And just give them two fixtures. Yeah, exactly. It's a 2-for-1 warranty.
So that LM70 that some people right now are using one of three measurements, and a lot of times, you know, the more legit ones are using what the or accurate LM70. What's that called again?
So it's a TM21 projection.
Sorry, TM21.
So LM80. Let's say you've tested for 10,000 hours, which is about a year. You then project with TM21. It gives you a projected value and a calculated L70 and a projected L70. Those numbers could be, you know, 300,000 hours, 500,000 hours. Ridiculous numbers. The one that makes sense, that is actually meaningful, is the reported L70. It's the one that's been capped.
Who's in charge of saying what people can put on their package?
And the reason, well, we'll get to that in a second. The reason that
good question.
that cap is there is because the original authors of TM21 knew that there's only so far into the future that you can project and be statistically valid. Sorry, what was your question?
Who's in charge of what you can put on your package?
So that's the problem. This is where the handoff from the engineer to the marketing team is happening. So the engineer comes up with a TM21 report, and they hand it over to the marketing team. The marketing team looks at it and says, oh, well, that number is much bigger. I'm going to use that one. It says L70 next to it, right? So there's nothing there to police that right now.
Can there be?
Maybe there ought to be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The lighting industry needs somebody that's got a bat phone right to the president. Like, lighting is so important. It's militarily strategic.
Yeah.
It's at the heart of security.
Yeah.
It is as pervasive as any technology out there. So electric lighting is everywhere, right? And the president of the United States needs to know something sometimes. And someone from the industry, maybe a Jim Benyon, needs to be appointed and say, you need to call the president and tell him this right now. Sort him out. Like, somebody has to be able to do that, because there's just too much BS in this business right now.
I wonder if the Federal Trade Commission takes an interest in this topic.
It's about time.
I don't know.
There's a lot of agencies that could, from in the American government, that could look at lighting and make some moves, actually. What's the one you said, the FDA?
Yeah.
They could look at lighting.
Well, insofar as there are health claims made.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they have to if there are. You know, the health claims made. They're not going to do that.
Yeah, but the Federal Trade Commission has the authority to police claims made in the market.
Are they the ones that protect consumers, like with packaging? Like, this is not true. Is there another agency that looks at that too, like Consumer Protection Agency?
I think it's all housed within FTC.
Yeah.
I mean, the FTC is responsible for the black and white lighting facts label. Some may not be aware that there were two lighting facts labels circulating for a few years. There was the DOE's colorful lighting facts label. I say that because it's the easiest way to differentiate the two. They had the colorful one. That was just sunset recently. The FTC continues to have a black and white lighting facts label that remains in effect for any lamp that's within scope. It's an important distinction, because if you're caught selling lamps into the U.S. market, and that lamp is within the FTC's scope, and you don't have that label on your package, the FTC can come after you.
So on that label, does it say the correct figures for the LM80 hours, things like that?
No,
it doesn't.
It's not part of it.
Why couldn't it? Could it be? Should it be?
Maybe.
Be a pretty easy solution, I would think.
Maybe it should be.
Add it right to it.
Yeah, if we don't start acting more responsible as an industry, there's going to be more regulation coming for this industry, and it's going to get tougher, actually.
Yeah. Well, I think it's undermining the credibility of the story that we collectively have been selling about solid state lighting. Put this in, it'll last, you know, what was the claim? You put this in, it'll last until your kid leaves for college.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, what's funny is that, like, I think the easiest metric that I'm selling light bulbs every day on the street, like, You know, so is he. Like, I'm standing in front of customers every day, and they'll ask me about it. I say, you know, you got to think about two times a life of a fluorescent tube. Mm-hmm. That's a good way to tell them. Okay. You know, a fluorescent tube is 24,000 hours, apparently. Yeah. Last time I checked. Apparently. Yeah. And, you know, I just tell them double that. And that's, you know, that's a good way. You know, a CFL is 10,000 hours. If you're putting in an LED, it's double the CFL. It's a good way to look at it. And that's realistic because it also affects, you know, gives them an idea that the more you use it, the faster it's going to burn out, the more the light level is going to go down. I mean, it's actually, for me, being realistic with it helps win some deals and helps lose other deals.
But it's time for the industry as a whole to be realistic. And that's what we need to get to. Because you know, you and I are out there battling this, and just like manufacturers are battling it against each other too. Because there are a lot of people out there that just aren't realistic with their claims, and then it kind of screws the whole industry.
Yeah, it's time to start pouring scorn on those, like serious industry scorn on those that offend basic principles of life projection, warranties, that are screwing things up. Like, the only way to do it is social ostracization in the industry. Like, to say, to point them out amongst your colleagues and say, stop doing that.
I gave a presentation about a month ago at an industry event to this effect. I had a hall of shame where I showed about 30 examples of manufacturers, including many multinational corporations who have adopted this as their policy, just to use the uncapped values.
Yeah.
But you know, there were 50 people in the room. That's who I reached with that.
Sure.
You know, so I had sort of a personal mission.
Well, 5,000 people are going to listen to this.
Yes. There you go. I'm moving it up. 55,000. I need 50,000. 500,000.
Yeah.
Keep increasing.
Greggy, anything else?
I don't think so. I think it was a good
call. It. That's 30 minutes, yeah. 35 minutes.
Yeah, that was really 35 minutes.
Yeah, it's a bit of a time warp when you get in there.
Yeah, it is. It's quick.
Yeah, okay. Cool. So thank you for coming on the Get a Grip on Lightning podcast.
Thanks, I appreciate it. This was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you.
Keystone Technologies. Go to KEYSTONETECH.com, baby. KeystoneTech.com. I'm loving me those 9-watt bypass tubes, man. I can't believe 183 lumens per watt. Wow.
Isn't that crazy? Out of an LED tube that bypasses a ballast and it's flicker free. They're really taking care of what needs to be done right now. Giving you the highly efficient LED tube that's easily replaceable, which we all like. No ballast you need. You can bypass it. And you don't have any flicker issue. It's got it all covered. 9-watt Keystone bypass tube available July of 2019.
I love LED tubes.
Who doesn't?
I love them, man. I mean, I think the vast majority of applications to me, you should just do LED tubes. I know some, I mean, not the vast majority. I'm talking about retrofit now, right? I'm talking about new fixtures and that. I mean, there are applications where you want to make the look better and you need new fixtures and so on and so forth. But, you know, so many people out there just pop in that new tube and get on with your life, man. You know, it's especially now flicker free. We've really settled things down. Keystone's a leader. So go to KEYSTONETECH.com. And, of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org. And thank you, Alex Baker, for coming on the show. And, of course, all of our listeners, Greggy. We love them. Thank you, listeners.
You got it.
Yeah, come on.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, the Lord is there to find you.